Why do we enjoy horror? I mean, when you think about it, isn't there something a little sick about the way we find entertainment value in cruelty? Maggie Nelson's the author of several books of poetry, criticism, and memoir. Her latest book is called The Art of Cruelty, A Reckoning. In the book, Nelson explores the images of torture, horror, and endless warfare that inhabit our political and entertainment landscape. She talked with Steve Paulson about the French dramatist Antonin Artaud and his ideas about the relationship between art and cruelty.
He coined the term theater of cruelty in the 30s, in The Theater and Its Double, and he was interested in kind of following Nietzsche in a way and pushing this idea of cruelty beyond necessarily its connotation of sadism or brutality and into a kind of theater of the senses, in which he imagined it would be the end of all psychological theater, you know, the end of kitchen sink theater, the end of kind of theater where you were able to leave and say, oh, you know, discuss character motivation or talk about how moved you were, but what really would have theater be an immersive experience for the senses.
So he wanted to jolt you. He wanted to sort of shock you out of your complacency and, I don't know, transform you in some way.
Absolutely, which is a very prototypical, you know, avant-garde attitude toward the arts. And I think Artaud, I compare him, as he's often compared, with Brecht. Brecht had a more concrete political effects he would like to achieve with whatever jolts or stylistic devices that Brecht wanted to use in the theater. Artaud was a madman.
Literally a madman, right?
Yes, literally, quite literally. And he had much more as a goal, a kind of transformation of consciousness. As Susan Sontag says, you can do many things with Artaud, but you cannot apply him. So trying to apply his ideas about this jolt that he would hope that you would get, trying to apply them to, you know, it would make us better people, or it would make for a better theater, or it would make for a more just social order. None of those cause-effect equations held for Artaud. He was really after a sensation and experience.
What did he mean by cruelty, though? What would be some examples of that?
It's a good question because, as I say in this chapter, Theaters of Cruelty, he was really at pains both in his manifestos and in his letters to differentiate the word cruelty from simple sadism or violence or bloodshed. He called it nothing less or nothing more than the appetite for life. He was kind of renaming the life force, a kind of, as he called it, an implacable necessity.
I have to say that that's sort of an odd way to think about the life force as
right, indeed, right?
that has to involve cruelty. Why does it?
You've just named the whole, you know, question of this chapter. Why violence? I mean, this is actually one of the big questions of the book. Why so many humans, Artaud, only one among them, have remained infatuated by this idea that something about violence or something about a kind of extramural cruelty would have a particular capacity to deliver us, you know, either beyond good and evil or to deliver us into this very strong felt experience of what being alive was about. I don't partake in that personally. I find it very confusing, as it sounds like perhaps you do as well.
So to think about this in our own time, do you think someone like Artaud, who is, you know, very much a figure of the avant-garde, has he had much influence on current entertainment and maybe even current politics?
Oh, gosh, I don't think necessarily current politics, although the phrase theater of cruelty is very applicable to many aspects of our political system and the workings of our political world, but I don't think necessarily in the way that Artaud would have meant. At one point in my book, I Google theater of cruelty, and this was, you know, a few years ago. The first hit was to Abu Ghraib, an article in The Nation calling them our theater of cruelty, and the second hit was to American Idol, calling American Idol a theater of cruelty. So that kind of gave it, I thought, a pretty good panoply of where the term had landed in, by, you know, at least 2003 or 2005. You know, Artaud was tapping into a carnivalesque tradition, and he was also very interested in Native American rituals and all kinds of things, and drug use, and I think festivals like Burning Man and a lot of performance art in the 60s. The Viennese Actionists are a very extreme group. Much performance art, any kind of immersive, experiential, to some extent, you know, some of the things going on with Occupy Wall Street, they're not Artaud-related in theater of cruelty, but I think that
they're in your face, though.
Yeah, I mean, in your face, I was more thinking not so much about the in-your-face element as the disinterest in demands as much as in trying to give an example of how we might live differently.
Hmm. Well, let's talk about one of the most provocative examples of that, which you write about in your book. There was a performance piece by Chris Burden called Shoot in 1971. First of all, can you describe what happened in that piece?
Sure. The piece Shoot, which is probably one of Burden's most famous pieces, was a piece in which he was curious, that's his word, he was curious about what it would feel like to be shot, and he arranged an event in a gallery with invited onlookers to come and had a friend shoot a gun at his arm from across the gallery and shot him in the arm.
This was then put on film. I mean, it raises the obvious question, why in the world would he ask a friend to shoot him with a rifle?
A lot of the discussion around the piece shoot had to do with, you know, whether or not this kind of act could be called art. I mean, many, many things in the 60s and 70s that we're aiming to push at, well, way before that with, you know, the futurists or whoever in the, you know, turn of the century. But certainly in the 60s and 70s, a lot of performance art, the question was more often circulated around, you know, is this art or how can this be called art? I mean, the piece shoot, and I talk about this in my book, cruelty poses a particular challenge when there's something that is cruel to oneself versus something cruel that one does to another, per se. So the issue of consent.
So one question, then, an ethical question, is why would his friend consent to shoot him?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think in my book, I do a lot of work to try and think harder about certain kinds of issues of what we might call shooting an act of self-harm. There are a lot of different forms of self-harm in art and otherwise, that if the person is wanting it to be done to them, and there are a lot of questions that get raised about who and why and when would it be appropriate to step in and not do to a body what it would like to have done to it.
We've been talking about art and the art of cruelty, and I want to sort of broaden this discussion to see what this might have to do with love, because you quote the poet William Carlos Williams. There's a poem, The Ivory Crown, where he has the line, "The business of love is cruelty, which by our wills we transform to live together." What do you make of that?
For a while when I was researching this book, I was pulling together different lines of poetry and other comments that might serve as good epigraphs or good food for thought for me for this project. And that one, "The business of love is cruelty, which by our wills we transform to live together," by Williams, it had always stuck in my mind and I had always liked it. I was troubled by it the more I looked at it closely, because there's a chapter in the book called Who We Are, which is really about different contentions that are made. I think of them as very strategic. I don't think any of them can hold water at the end of the day. A lot of contentions that, you know, humans are essentially cruel or essentially good, or, you know, that compassion is at the bottom of our souls versus, you know, a kind of, you know, general sinfulness or wickedness or these different notions. I don't find those generalizations very useful in thinking about the human condition. And I think that that's part of the reason why the Williams quote, it drags through the book, because when I had first read it, it seemed like it meant a lot to me. And then I began to think, you know, the business of love is cruelty. I don't know if the business of love is any one thing. And as I say, nor did Williams, because in many other poems, he says the business of love is, you know, something else. The business of love is, you know, a love of nature. A business of love is building a great garden. You know, he has many different lines. I ended up using the line as a kind of almost a test case or a warning for what it can be like if you hold on to any one line about human beings. But I do like, I should say, when he says, "By our will, we transform to live together," this notion that cruelty and love maybe need not be. I mean, anyone who's been in love, I think, can associate, you know, because of its relationship to vulnerability, and because humiliation can so quickly follow on the heels of vulnerability, and because any situation where someone doesn't love you, which it may be essentially blameless, whom you love, may feel like a cruelty to you, even though it's not maybe technically intended to be a cruelty by the other person, or any of those things that attend love. I think that rather than thinking of them as, you know, opposites, as we tend to think of on a spectrum, I did like the way that the line brings them together and offers a notion of, as I say in the book, of an alchemical relationship between them, so that they need not be at polar ends of a spectrum, but actually can be transformed into each other, perhaps back and forth.
Maggie Nelson is the author of The Art of Cruelty, A Reckoning. She spoke with Steve Pauls.